Welcome back to the Virtual Velo Podcast. This is episode 30. No, it's not. It's episode 41. I can't even get the number right, Chris. I am Cy Bradley, and as always, I am joined by co-host Christopher Schwenker. How are you, sir?
I am well, Cy, and I'm surprised that you would forget the number. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the community right now. It's kind of like a whirlwind is the way I always describe it. You know what I mean? But
we don't want to talk about numbers. Let's leave the numbers alone.
Yeah, numbers, all kinds of things are making it a whirlwind. But if you've listened in the past, you will know that our mission, which you, our audience, are an integral part of, is to promote cycling esports in a positive and forward-thinking manner. If you've tuned in to hear about the polarizing issues facing the sport, such as the speculation of Zwift's demise or the business ethics of capitalizing on it, I'm sorry to say we won't be contributing to the toxic tribalism that has permeated the community. It doesn't help the sport if one company crushes the other. The healthy competition drives the sport forward. My vision for the future of the sport is multi-platformism. I don't even know if that's a word, but I'm calling it a word right now. The next generation will be the true indoor specialists, the riders who will use many platforms for the features that appeal to them. I'm level 100 on Zwift, and I enjoy riding with the community I've established there. However, I frequently race on Indie Velo for the purpose-built racing features and credibility. And I will be jumping into the SRC on my wish to experience the evolution of the platform in preparation for the World Championships in October. The hope is that the UCI will establish an international calendar and ranking system incorporating the multi-platform model, as the former head of esports for the UCI, Michael Rogers, told me when I interviewed him. That said, I am excited about speaking with our guest. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Cy. You know, I have a point of telling stories over and over, as you nicely pointed out the last time that we got together. But this person was the first person in the industry to give me a chance. He opened the door to the freelance writing world to me. In early 2022, my first article was published on Cycling News while he was a tech editor. And now all of the other editors in the space have to blame him for the 50 emails I send them pitching cycling esports articles in five different ways. He is one of the good guys in the sport that could use a few more right now. Would you like to do the honor, Cy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've said what needs to be said, but yeah, he is a cycling esports legend, but obviously on the road and in his professional career, he's also a legend, as you have highlighted there, Chris. It is my pleasure to introduce one of our panel members, actually, when we did the infamous list. So we're going to talk about that briefly. But of course, I am pleased to welcome Aaron Borrell. Welcome to the show, Aaron. How are you?
Hey guys, thank you very much for having me. Super pumped to be on the show. For some reason, it does feel like I've been on you before, but I haven't. So really looking forward to discussing all things esports and a little bit on the list.
Yeah, well, we said that in pre-show, right? That it's. I said, we've done this before. And you're like, no, this is my first time on the show. But of course, we've had these three-way conversations on a really regular basis in the past as we were working through that list and discussing all sorts of things as well. So plenty been going on. Welcome to the show, of course. Why don't you just give us a background about your... Well, why don't we start with your in real life cycling? Where did it start from you, and where are you up to now?
Yeah, so I started cycling about 10 years ago, and I was kind of peer pressured at work to get a mountain bike when I was working at Top Car Magazine, which is a licensee of Car UK. Everyone was riding, and eventually I caved in to the pressure. And my wife got me a mountain bike for my birthday, and things just spiraled out of control from there.
Chris, I don't know about you, but this—I don't want to sound frustrated, but we keep getting these elite level athletes on who have not been in the sport since the year dot, if you like. You know, Aaron's telling me 10 years he's been in the sport, and he's at the top of the game. I've been doing this since I was like 14, and I'm nowhere near that. These guys are just built with natural talent, Chris.
Oh, it's not only that, Cy, it's worse for me because in addition to being a cyclist that I could never be, he's also an award-winning writer. So he's like the person that I want to be when I grow up, right? This is the guy right here. In addition to having some really great opinions and viewpoints and, you know, championing the sport in an area that's, you know, pretty much not really, doesn't have a lot of representations, which we're going to get into in a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that because obviously there is a bit we want to get through the course of this show. So why don't we start with sort of Team South Africa, I guess, because you're the captain, as I understand. Maybe you can give me a detail, but You're the captain of the cycling esports team South Africa, right?
Yeah, I'm the captain of the national team. I was given that responsibility last year. And it's not, I mean, it's a captain as in terms of I help with the organization and just make sure that everyone's up to speed. Everyone's got everything in place. It's not about me telling guys what to do during the race, but it's more of a leadership role within the squad, helping the guys and just putting things through the right channels.
Which I guess is important given you know, the amount of riders you guys have got. We'll get onto the World Championships in a little bit. If I look at the allocation, you guys have got a good number of athletes there this time. And of course, you've also got a former world champion in the ranks as well.
Yeah, it's very exciting that we've been awarded with that allocation. So it's 7 men and 7 women. And that's based on our finishing positions in 2022 and 2023. So obviously we had James Barnes and Gary Muller do really well in 2022 on the men's side. Ashley Moorman-Passio, I think, podiumed in that event. So that kind of bolstered our points tally, which got us those 14 spots.
Yeah, so I think that we're kind of burying in the lead here, and it's just going back to the very basics, is that South Africa has a national esports team. Right, not all of the federations acknowledge esports to begin with, and very few of them actually acknowledge a national team. So I know, Aaron, I've seen your national colors. You have real world jerseys that go along with it, and the other bells and whistles. So it's pretty impressive. And you know, I've done work with as far as documenting what they do over in Denmark and the great success that they have, and in Sweden as well. And the federations that actually focus on cycling esports have success. And your federation is just another proof of that.
Yeah, the federation, Cycling South Africa, they've embraced it as a standalone discipline, which is great. I think there's still a lot to do in the background just to get it up to where we want. And the federation is currently working on some parameters in terms of how we're going to select the squad for 2024. So we're going to have an official selection policy that is going to be a bolt on to the road cycling selection policy, because they've pigeonholed the two together, road and esports.
So why do you think that esports is so successful in South Africa? It doesn't seem like it would be, it's kind of you described it to us in pre-production as a third world country. I don't know if I would describe it that way, but you obviously know better. You're from there. Why do you think it's, has taken, why is it so popular? Why are you guys so successful?
There's a lot of cyclists back home in South Africa. I'm based in the UK now. I've been here for 5 years. James Barnes is in New Zealand. Henry Ace, who's on My Whoosh, he's in New Zealand too. So a lot of us are based all over the world, but esports in South Africa, it kind of picked up massively during lockdown, like it did in every other country. And for a country that has such a really good climate, 365, it's really good to see that all the riders are getting together every Thursday for WTRL time trials. And the cyclists have embraced it and seen it as a means to stay fit, helps them with their training programs and hitting certain intervals. So it's a definite benefit to the training.
Now, obviously, you mentioned a few athletes there that we all know, and yourself across the different platforms. But what about the federation then? Because what are the federation doing? Are they doing anything in terms of the promotion of cycling esports in South Africa?
I wouldn't say actively doing things to promote it, but we do have an esports portal on the Cycling South Africa webpage, on social media. They will promote it. When James was doing well at the Olympic esports event in Singapore, Cycling South Africa did share that. So I think we're in a pretty good space, but I think that the country as a whole needs to embrace esports as a genuine discipline, and that's because of certain individuals that have kind of marred the reputation of esports within South Africa. I don't want to mention any names. We know who that individual is, but that kind of took things back a couple of notches. And now, as we've seen the success in 2023, James Barnes finishing top 10 at UCI Esports World Championships, that's just really helped helped with the credibility and kind of boosting things back to up where they were.
Well, after speaking to the folks over at British Cycling side, we certainly know how the marred reputation certainly sticks with them, that's for sure. So do you have to have a South African race license in order to race esports?
Yeah, you do.
And does it have an esports endorsement?
No, it's just an elite racing license from what I understand.
Does the federation do anything to support the team? Like, do you race as a team? Do they do anything? Do they provide equipment, anything in that way?
Well, what we're going to be doing for 2024 is selecting the squad earlier and then encouraging the teams to race more together, to get our power passports in check and start with the Sunday Race Club. I think that's going to be a good way for us to get into the My Wish dynamics. It's obviously very different to Zwift. A few of us have already started on My Wish, not racing, but just getting familiar with the platform, checking out the dynamics. The drafting is pretty challenging from what I've seen. There's a slingshot effect. It's very difficult to actually stay on a wheel. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more of the squad racing together and just kind of sort of boosting the sort of morale within the team and just honing the racecraft.
So South Africa isn't going to actually have a qualification series on My Wish or any other platform?
Yeah, well, I think because we've got a squad of essentially 14 individual riders, that's quite a massive quota already. But I think we will put out a press release sort of stating the qualification process for community riders that feel that they could potentially get drafted into the squad, granted they qualify. But it would be the same as it was on Zwift, where the onus is on that rider to sort of meet the criteria, make sure the equipment is in check, and then go through the process.
I interviewed the relationship manager at My Wish. He's a Belgian chap by the name of Bart Vandendries. And when I was over in Abu Dhabi, you could tell that he takes his cycling very seriously. He was crushing all of us. I actually interviewed him because My Wish was involved in a cycling festival in Abu Dhabi where there were a number of different cycling events that went on, and they put up they had 20 bikes in a room at the Abu Dhabi Cycling Club, which is kind of like this purpose-built cycling club that's for youth development and for promoting cycling in the community. And there's a beautiful track there and everything else. And I just wanted to get a sense of how it went because, you know, they have a big live event coming up and they, you know, I'm like, did you use this as kind of like a test run? He said, no, we have much more sophisticated things going on. So then while I had him, I wanted to ask him about how things were going with the federations because that's his job, is to get the federations on board. He said that as of now, they have 16 of the federations that are on board as far as creating a qualification series. So that's out of the 25 or 26. So that's the majority. And then I took the opportunity to go and look at all the websites for all the different national governing bodies, and none of them are updated that I could find. There are very few that have any kind of criteria that are up to date, except for the U.S. But I know that the U.S. is going to be holding a qualification series on My Wish coming up, and that the criteria that are there aren't accurate. So I don't know that since you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on over there on the governance side of things, Aaron, was the fact that the race book came out kind of later than we anticipated, is that slowing things down at all, or is it just the natural progression of things?
Yeah, I think we've got quite a lot of time still before World Champs kicks off, and the federation is busy digesting all that information in the race book. And you need to remember that as a traditional cycling federation, most of the federation's esports is pretty new, and some of the members aren't really familiar with all the different protocols with esports. So there's representatives, I think, on every federation, which is kind of guiding them as to what esports is about and the best way to go about things. So right now, the race book is with the federations. The federation is going through it, and I'm not saying there isn't going to be a qualification pathway for South Africa. We are talking about various community rides on My Wish that we want to set up. And I think with the squad of 14, it would be great if we could get an extra three or four on each side. It's just going to be good. It's going to be good for the sport. It's going to be good for Africa. And speaking of Africa, I think representation for the continent as a whole needs to improve. If I look at the Elite Swift Games, it was just myself and James Barnes who raced, which I think was it was good for the continent, but in terms of representation, it's nowhere near where I think it should be. But both of us, we finished in the top 40, so we did pretty well representing our continent. But if you look at some of the other countries, the UK, the US, most of the European countries, they're far kind of outnumbered us in that regard. And it's not that the African countries aren't participating with esports. We've got the Masaka Cycling Club in Uganda. These guys are absolute machines. They're racing in the WTRL time trial most Thursdays in the Zwift Racing League. Most of them are mountain goers generating crazy amounts of power. The talent there is unreal. And I think if we could just improve that infrastructure and find pathways for them to get through at the highest level, that'd be great. I know Angola's been given 2 spots for the World Championships. Andre Matthias, who raced in the 2022 UCI Cycling World Championships, I'm sure he's going to be buzzing with excitement. He's busy preparing for the Olympics in Paris. He's a rower. So if Andre can get back in, that'd be really good too.
No, I think you raise a really interesting point there. And, you know, in one respect, you're highlighting the quality that does exist, given the representation not in the non-national events. You know, what you guys have achieved in the national events is phenomenal. But it's also, I guess, you know, I've been talking to someone today in the role I'm in now, which we'll talk about later, from Namibia, for example. You know, and I think this is one of the things that we're trying to do as a sport, is to make it more accessible as well.
Yes.
You know, financially, in terms of the climate and the environment as well. So, you know, again, I think that's something that's really important, that accessibility across the platforms and lowering that bar to entry is looked at across all territories.
Yeah, and I agree. And Aaron, you had mentioned that we still have plenty of time, but we really don't. Like, things are coming up pretty fast. Like, if the public qualification pathways, when you speak about accessibility and lowering the bar, you know, MyWish has committed to having a series of races, I believe it's 6, so that emerging countries and racers that weren't able to qualify in their own nation series, or, you know, weren't able to petition to get on the team, are able to get it. And they don't want to actually host those until the federations have already chosen their teams, because they don't want to take athletes away from that, right? Because the athletes that qualify in the public qualification pathway are actually additions to the allotment. So if somebody else from South Africa, you know, qualifies in the public qualification pathway races, then you'll have 8 guys or 9 or 10, or, you know, it's a significant thing. So the federations have to, you know, get that organized and get it out there and get it done so that the public qualification pathway races can get done. So we know how the federations do things. They're a bit deliberate in the way that they go about it, especially with esports that they don't really devote a lot of resources to. So I know it's exciting. We're kind of coming down to crunch time here.
Yeah, I guess it's also an interesting time of year as well, right? Because we've moved the date of when this World Championships is going to take place. Aaron and I are both in the UK, you know, and we read a lot of the, you know, what's going on with the race results and events and so on. That this is the peak time. You know, I'm just thinking about British cycling. You know, these guys are busy organizing what's going to be a hopefully busy road race season or time trialing season in the UK. So also that switch of timing is an interesting one, and I guess that's had an impact on the national governing bodies. But also, Chris, you've written about this also. The UCI has gone through some change recently as well. We'll see Michael Rogers is no longer in position. We've got, I think, what we're calling a temporary individual looking after cycling esports. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I wonder whether those things have contributed to a little bit of delay in getting this information out too.
Yeah, I think it has. You know, the Jacob, who, you know, Sai, you and I have met in person and had some really nice conversations with, he's, as far as I can tell, after speaking to the UCI and speaking to him, you know, he's the one who's driving things over there as far as having a knowledge of esports. And then, you know, he was instrumental in creating the race book, and he'll be instrumental in the World's Championships going forward. He's a part-time consultant. You know, he's not there full-time, and he was working in consulting Michael Rogers, who's no longer there, who had a fairly deep knowledge of esports coming from, there's a lot of resources that aren't there anymore devoted to esports. So I certainly think that that had an impact on getting the book out, and it will going forward, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully, now the book's out there, and hopefully we see some movement with the National Federation. So, Aaron, thanks for giving us your background on that. Guys, I think we need to move this topic on now, because let's talk about this the list, the most impactful list that we put together. We did it quite a few months now, and I think we promised the community we would talk about it. But, Chris, I think you want to give some background, first of all, of why we did this.
The idea wasn't my own, obviously. The lists are as old as the ages, but I saw it on the Escape Collective. I'm a big fan of the Escape Collective because I admire their independent journalism and their membership model. And when I was able to give them my money to support them, I graciously did it. And I met Ronan over in Abu Dhabi, and we had some really nice conversations about the way that they go about things, and a true admirer of what they do. So when they did a list, I'm like, you know what, maybe that's something that we can do. And then I began thinking about it, and I saw the engagement that they were getting. It was just incredible engagement. And I'm like, this could certainly open up a lot of channels for cycling esports, and maybe get people who maybe would not be talking about cycling esports, to raise awareness and get some eyes on the sport. In addition to the fact that I wanted to celebrate the personalities, and we went back to retroactive to the beginning of the birth of esports, and to kind of humanize their personalities and give a face to the avatar, which I've been trying to do since I founded the Zmunike 3 years ago, basically just to expand the social network. And it seemed to go pretty well in that respect.
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting process, but I think you're right there. It was a celebration. Nothing like this had been done before in cycling esports. We are all, can I say nerds? But we are all cycling esports nerds. We love the sport. We love what's going on with this community across all platforms, and it was really a celebration. And I guess if I just talk about that process, you and I, Chris, discussed this first, and we said, look, this can't be just you and I, on this panel making this decision. And I think we threw a few names around, and then Aaron was the one that really stood out to us because, he's got that elite experience, but also he's got that background in journalism. And we know, having spoken to him before, because I think you've interviewed him a couple of times before, Chris, we knew that his depth and knowledge was pretty broad, and he's, unfortunately, I don't know if I can say, you've been at, you've had all the experiences, I guess, in the cycling esports, both good and bad, as an athlete. You've touched all those areas. So, we all contributed to this list. We all put names forward to this list, and we sat down. I don't want to count how many hours we sat down for, but there was quite a lot of time we sat down discussing who was on the list, who we're going to remove to this. And it was a very long list, I have to say, and it was quite difficult. But Chris, you'd put a hard, not a hard number on there, but you'd sort of say, guys, this is the point where we've got to kind of cap the list, because we could have kept going.
Yeah, no, we certainly could have. And I didn't want it to be diluted by having a million names, And as far as it was, 50-something was already more than I wanted to have. But, we had a lot of very significant, long, extended discussions about this whole thing. Like, if I would have known how much work it was going to be, I probably would have passed. It was 3 months, and doing all the meetings that we had, first, coming up with the concept, coming up with the names. I polled a million community members, in addition to doing all the research for the background for actually creating the bios and the, my son Connor, the aspiring graphic artist, helped us with the visuals, and Aaron also, who has a lot of skill there, helped with that too. So there was a lot of work involved.
I think that's a really important point there, though, you made. You also had other people from the community that knowledgeable people in the community putting names into that list. Yes, they weren't just part of this shortlisting panel of three, but actually the panel, the contributing panel who put the names in was much broader than us three. So, yeah, really interesting process. Aaron?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed the process, and I've been involved in sort of judging many times before. I'm a three-time Car of the Year judge. I'm a two-time bicycling Bike of the Year judge, and I've been a judge at a fine art Eisteddfod. I've got an honors degree in fine art as well. So having been involved in a judging process prior to this, I can say categorically that the way we did things and the way that Chris and Yusai organized things in the background, the work was rock solid. And you're not going to please everyone. You're never going to please anyone on these lists. If I go back to when the Porsche came in one car of the year in South Africa, the public was outraged. They didn't understand why the car won. And it was about how it moved the goalposts within its segment. We weren't saying that it was better than the most affordable car, but within its segment, it moved the goalposts. And that's pretty much what we were doing in the background. Yeah, it was individuals who we felt moved the goalposts within their area of expertise.
Right, and the goal was to get a reaction, right? We wanted people to talk about this, and it certainly did that. And I like, you know, we got a lot of criticism. We got it kind of polarized the community in some respects. And like the first thing I want to say, and I say this about everything that I write, is that I'm truly grateful that anybody reads a word of what I write, right? and to then have it mean as much to them to actually comment, that means a lot to me. You know, the comments sometimes are not very flattering, but you know, that's the way it goes. But as far as the analytics for this, for the list, off the charts. Like I know I mentioned about the former one with Ali and Lionel.
Yeah.
It blew that away. And the amount of comments and engagement were, you probably add up all my articles together and it would equal what the list put out. And the one thing that was really flattering and humbling was that people were sharing the digital award certificate to their communities, to their social network, as if it really meant something to them. And when I saw David Lapartien, the president of the UCI, do that, I said to myself, you know what, I think that this we did our job here. This worked out pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I thought the reaction actually on the most part from what I saw was really positive. Of course, I'm lots of, you know, different Discord chats and so on. It was great that it had a conversation. Of course, there's always going to be someone, but there was also lots of debates going on, which I thought was really great. The debates that I saw going on in the Discord channels and in the forums, and that I was getting by message. I'm sure you were getting, Chris, and Aaron too. Yeah, but that was all part of it, right? It got us talking, and there were some names on there that were controversial that, you know, some of us were not comfortable with, but, you know, sometimes we got outvoted. But, you know, I think that's the important thing, though. It wasn't the most influential. It wasn't the best in class. It was the most impactful. Had, you know, with the contribution they made, good, bad, whatever the way we look at it, made an impact on the sport. And it did. And it raised the conversation. Having said that, Chris and Aaron, I think there's going to be lessons learned. And I think we're going to make progress and evolve this process.
Yeah, absolutely. Like one thing that I heard as a comment, and I took it to heart because the person that made this comment, several did, was absolutely right. And, you know, we should have thought of this. And this is something that we're certainly going to change in the future. But we need a female representation on the panel. I already have someone picked out. I'm hoping to maybe have two, you know, women who are prominent in the community come on and do that. And also have, you know, equal representation on the list itself. You know, the further editions of the list aren't going to be 50 people because it's only going to be for the prior year. So there'll be less people. We want to have equal representation as far as that's concerned. I know, Aaron, you have some thoughts as well.
Yeah, I think as a starting point, it was a really, really good job. We've laid the foundations. We know what works. We know what doesn't work. And it's always great to grow the panel just to get more ideas, more insights, have another fresh mind, bring it in. And having some female representation, I think, is the next, the logical next step for us.
And I think they'll even seek nominations from the community. Now that the community knows what the list is about, why not take nominations and have people, you know, tell why they would want a certain person before the list comes out so that we can defend it afterwards. Yeah, I think I think it was a really a success. It checked all the boxes for what we three as a panel wanted to achieve. And I look forward to it. Like my vision is that, you know, eventually it becomes like a real world event. We can all get together and, you know, get dressed up and shake each other's hands and hug and things. But anyway, I appreciate the help. I know it was a huge ask for both of you guys.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A really great, fun experience for you guys. And yeah, I mean, maybe I was out of my depth. I'm with two like journalists here. So yeah, you guys did a lot of work and contributed well. Luke, Aaron, thank you very much for joining on the show. It's been fascinating to hear about what's happening with Team South Africa and your role there as well. Wishing you the best of luck in the World Championships in October, and hopefully I get to meet you as one of those top 20 athletes who make it to Abu Dhabi in October. So fingers crossed, good luck for the qualifications and the semi-finals, of course, because I think you're going to be there at the semi-finals. And we look forward to see what comes of the list in future.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me. Really looking forward to the World Championships. Obviously, it's outdoor season now in the UK, so I'm trying to sort of focus all of my attention to time trial season, but still dabbling with some esports on the side. But when the sun comes out in the UK, you have to take advantage of it. So I'm trying to get a bit of work on my tan and try and rekindle a bit of bronze from South Africa on my arms and legs.
Well, good luck. And I look forward to seeing those pictures of you in that Level Velo BL13 skin suit at some stage as well. So I look forward to those Instagram posts. Best of luck on the road. Best of luck in the esports, Aaron. Thanks for joining us. And hopefully we can get you back on closer to those World Championships.
Thanks, guys.
Chris, this is like, we're still on episode 41, Chris, but it's like a show of two halves this time. I always enjoy talking to Aaron, but gets a little bit more serious in the second half because we're going to be introducing a new host very shortly, Chris. And I've got to say, I'm glad I'm not taking over from this host. I'm glad I'm handing over because if I was taking over from the new co-host that you've got, I would be so intimidated given the palmares both professionally, you know, and also the just wait till we get her on and you listen to the quality of the sound from your new co-host. But I guess this is the time where I have got to tell the listeners and the audience, this is my final virtual Velo podcast for the time being as a co-host with Chris, because Chris, this is a neutral, cycling esports neutral ground, if you like. And I guess given my new relationship with my Whoosh, it's probably going to be difficult for me to stay completely unbiased and neutral.
Perception is everything, right, Si? And then I think that you probably could do a great job, but I'm not the one who's making the rules here, unfortunately. But, you know, since you opened up the door, what is your role going to be?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting one. It's I don't know the full details yet, but long story, very short. Let me put it this way. I actually went to my Whoosh. I've been riding Sunday Race Club for quite some time now. Everyone knows I've really enjoyed the platform. And let me just say at this point, I haven't won any money since November. So this definitely is not financially driven. I'm definitely not financially driven to race Sunday Race Club. It's just the toughest racing I've ever done. But I just really think the opportunity is there for that platform to really grow the sport of cycling esports. I think it's got a lot of great things going for it. So in all honesty, I knocked on the door of Matt Smithson a few months ago and said, look, if an opportunity comes up, I've got a few ideas. I'd love to be part of the team and help you guys out. And very fortunately, I guess a month ago, Matt and the team sort of approached me with an idea, which was in line with what I wanted to do. So yeah, I'm going to be doing some work with my Whoosh. I think people probably have already seen that. I'm doing the coaching, this live coaching, which is a great feature. So I'm hastened to say it, but imagine like Peloton, but for cyclists, if you will. So you're basically, what you're looking at is the virtual world as you would on my Whoosh, but then with a little box in the right hand or the left hand side of the screen with a coach. And it's not always me, but a cycling coach who basically is going to guide you through workouts. Some of those will be live, some of those will be video on demand. But if you one day you want to go and do a 40-20 session for an hour and 20 minutes with Si or even one of the other coaches out there as well, because Zach Neer is to name a coach, he's also going to be doing some. We've got plenty of other coaches coming. So I'm going to be looking after that for them. And that's recruiting coaches, doing the coaching myself. And then, yeah, maybe some work with the events team also.
Yeah, so with the events team, that's really exciting. And that's, you know, that's the part of it that the meat of what you and I have really wanted to make an impact on, right?
Yeah.
So you know, that's really exciting. And that's the part that's kind of tough for the listeners to be able to look past. And, you know, this is really the only source of independent cycling esports journalism that's out there. And the ability to speak my truth is extremely important to me, and I respect the impact of the right to do so, right? And the audience looks to us for an unbiased opinion. And whether it's your truth or not, people perceive that if you have a role there that's beyond just, you know, racing on Sunday Race Club, then you could potentially be influenced in one way or another. That left me with a really difficult decision to make. I could either let the podcast fade away or I could try to find somebody to fill your big shoes, and there aren't a ton of people out there that have your charisma, your broadcasting ability, the personality, and also a really strong background and you know, educated opinions about cycling esports. Thankfully, I was able to find somebody and somehow convinced her to take your chair.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I think the three of us and the two of us have very passionate about cycling esports, you know, and I want the sport to grow. You know, regardless of which platform I'm working in, you know, because let's be honest, I've been doing some contracted work to other platforms too in the past. I just want to see the sport grow. But I totally get the audiences and the listeners' background. You know, I've produced videos across multiple platforms now, and I was already receiving comments across there, you know, and again, you know, people perceive the fact that I won money back in November, as many athletes are doing on a regular basis on a Sunday race club. I was already getting some comments myself on the YouTube videos about that. But Chris, I absolutely agree. Oh, I say, I'm really glad Emma's following me because, of course, we are going to be talking to Emma Martin very shortly as the new co-host. But I'm glad she's following me, and I think you're in great hands.
Yeah, well, before we get into speaking about Emma, and now that you've transitioned from being the host to a source, I have some questions to ask you.
As the minute I told you that this was going to be a thing at MyWish, I suspected that the journalistic approach might switch on me now. So I'm almost prepared, Chris.
So, okay, well, good. I'm glad that you're almost prepared. At least one of us is. No, so I'm sure that Emma might want to have some questions for you, too, after we learn a bit about her. These on-demand workouts and things, that leaves open the possibility for some prominent members of the community, perhaps some prominent members of the real-world cycling community. I know that MyWish is in partnership with Team Emirates, and there are some pretty good cyclists on that team. In fact, one of them had a fairly stellar performance just a couple hours ago.
Yeah.
So, who's going to be doing these on-demand videos that we might know? And maybe you can give us some ideas to, you know, who the users are going to be able to take a look at on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a week into the working with them, so it's difficult for me to comment exactly who. But I agree. You know, and actually, what I will say is when I first looked at this with the team, we thought it would be just workouts. But if you think about it, you know, these could just be group rides. These could be event leaders, you know, event organizers doing these group rides. There could be celebrities. There could be pro riders. They could be cycling esports legends, you know, doing these rides. So the door's really wide open. Honestly, I don't know. It's still early days, so I don't know who is penciled in. At the moment, people are just going to have me for a couple of weeks as we continue to do these tests and intros. Because the onboarding process has gone a bit nuts this last week, I have to say. So I've been doing a load of intro videos over there. But, you know, I agree. Hopefully you're right, Chris. We do get some big names on there, I hope.
All right, so I'm going to ask this question in a different way then. If I name the person, can you say if it's a yes or a no? I'm only kidding.
I'm seeing you coming. I have no idea. I hope it happens. I hope it happens, but I have no idea.
Yeah, no, I'm just joking with you. And, you know, it certainly is an exciting prospect to be able to, you know, speak to you about these things and the developments and the evolution on the platform. And it's an exciting prospect for me to kind of see what's going on there, kind of through your eyes, and I think it's going to be a great thing.
Well, hopefully you'll still have me on as a guest, but let me try and, as I'm still current co-host, let me just spend the last 10 seconds of my co-host ability to transition and introduce the new co-host then, so it then deflects from me for a moment. So, yes, Emma, it's time to introduce you. Welcome, Emma Martin, to the show, the new co-host of the Virtual Velo podcast. Welcome, Emma.
Hello, and thank you ever so much for having me here today. And I have to say, I don't know about you following me, Si. I think you're one big pair of shoes to follow as well.
I'm not so. People are hearing the sound quality, and obviously, I can see your studio. I've seen your studio on the Sunday Race Club broadcast that you do as well. And many other platform broadcasts just before we get down the unbiased bias route, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're a true pro. I mean, I look down your qualification list and your experience. You've commented on some big events. You've raced some big events. And you're involved. You're very involved with the community there, Emma.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has been for a long time. And it is one of those things that I think it tends to evolve, doesn't it? You know, you start out in cycling in one very small way. And I transitioned from running into cycling in my 20s and have just continued with an absolute passion and a love of the sport not just of the sport, but of all the other things in my life that have come from it, the friendships, the community groups, the people, the places, and all of those things that just would not have been available to me if I hadn't found an absolute love for cycling.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, I don't know if you know this, but Emma and Matt are organisers of the Donny Chain Gang. And that is like one of the biggest group ride events I think that's ever existed.
The best kept secret on Zwift, that. Yeah, it is. And do you know, actually what's really funny, I started on e-cycling platforms purely as a way of training. I was racing nationals, the national series, the national championships in both mountain bike in the summer and cyclocross in the winter. And I started using the platforms just purely as training. So at 6 o'clock every morning before work, I would jump on for about 45 minutes, Monday to Friday, before anybody else in the house was up. And that was how I utilised the platforms that were available. And then 2020 hit. I was being coached at the time by Dean Downing. He was my coach. And one Saturday morning on lockdown, we all sort of looked at each other and the message boards went, and Dean and Russ from Downing Cycling went, why don't we all just jump on? So the whole squad of Downing Cycling coach riders jumped on a Saturday morning. And we did that for about 4 or 5 weeks. And then Russ went, there must be something we can do here. And then the Donny Chain Gang evolved. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 2 years continually that ran for before we took a break. The Women's Only Wednesday came about 8 months into that. We had we used to have quite a lot of women come onto the Donny Chain Gang. But once the legendary Go, Go, Go took place after the ramp, trying to hang on when you've got elite pro pelotons, you've got the Swifts dropping in, you've got all sorts of riders dropping in, as well as the local riders who were out on the Donny Chain Gang in real life. So we put a women's event on at Christmas as a special, and we had 130-something riders at that point in time, and it's just carried on since then.
Oh, it's a phenomenal event. Chris, have you ever done that Donny?
I haven't, but I need to do some on-demand training with you. I'm going to have to join that group ride also, I think.
You will. It's an amazing event, and what I like is there's always someone who doesn't get the rules and flies off the front, and the comments are brilliant, you know. All friendly, I would say, partially friendly, but sometimes not. But yeah, you've got to play by the rules there, otherwise you're owning yourself. And I tell you, I actually want to play by the rules, because if you go off the front too early, when it does ramp up and that go, go, go goes, you're getting caught and you're getting spat out the back anyway. So it's ferocious when it gets going as well, that ride.
Yeah, it is indeed. And we quite often have to remind new riders, just hang on, it'll get spicy, don't worry. We might be starting at 2 watts per kilo, but we're not finishing there.
So during the broadcast of the Sunday Race Club, I think it was last Sunday, there was that retrospective graphic that was put up showing the history. And you've announced every single edition of the Sunday Race Club, is that correct?
Oh, not quite. So the Sunday Race, Matt Payne, my co-commentator on the Sunday Race Club, came on board before myself. And I think he came on board early April, 2 full years ago. So he's into his third year. I came on board at the end of July, beginning of August that year. So about 6 months later. So I'm not quite at my 2 years of Sunday Race Club, but he's into his third year now. But the changes have been phenomenal, you know, and the numbers. When I first joined, we had 27 women on the Sunday Race Club. And, you know, and now we're heading towards 150. So that, again, has been absolutely, absolutely fantastic, you know, to follow the growth and evolution of that as well.
Yeah, so most of the people listening will know you from, you know, the My Wish Sunday Race Club, but you've done a significant amount of commentating of Zwift events, like the Tor Vecini, the Tor Budica. You know, you have a really significant presence with the, you know, all the women's racing on the platform, and they're a big supporter of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, earlier on back in January, the Tour of Boudicca, that was the Friday, Saturday, Sunday in January. That was fantastic. And then in March, the Iceni race series, you know, and when you think that ran every Tuesday throughout March, you know, and we were still getting strong, strong numbers at the end, over 200 women on those Tuesday night races. I mean, some of those numbers is the performances. I mean, if anybody drops in and watches them back, or anybody who actually followed them, the competitive nature of all of those categories racing those events was phenomenal.
You know, one of the major topics in cycling esports now is, you know, whether cycling esports needs the UCI. And you bring a significant amount of knowledge as far as that's concerned, because you've commentated on, the list of UCI events, world championship events that you've commentated on is like, it's longer than my arm. In addition to the fact that you've also been involved with British cycling and governance on the real world side also. So yeah, tell us about some of the UCI events, like artistic cycling and cycle ball. I've watched them. I still don't understand anything that's going on there. So it's pretty amazing that you have that range.
Yeah. So yeah, for me, actually, indoor cycling, and never to be confused with esports and e-cycling, two very, very different disciplines. So the indoor cycling world championships, I commentated on that when the world championships was in Glasgow last year. Indoor cycling, artistic cycling, which can be done individually, it can be done in pairs, or it can be done in teams. Think gymnastics, come circus skills, come phenomenal technique, skill, endurance, and strength. You can head over to a very well-established sports TV provider and actually take a look at it if you really want to see it, because it is amazing. And then cycle ball, football on bikes, no feet, no hands unless you're a goalie. You've got to get the ball with your front wheel. It is, if you think about it, and what I found really quite interesting when I went, that was the first World Champs I went to for indoor cycling, and I don't think I'm ever going to miss one now on. I am absolutely addicted. But if you imagine, artistic cycling is on, the crowd is quiet, subdued, concentrating, watching. Boom, 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 boom. The lights go, the strobe lights are on, the cycle ball riders, and they intermix them in the programme. So the people watching the cycle ball, they're at the bar getting a beer whilst the artistic cycling is on. They're back in the arena for the next round and the next set of heats. And then all of a sudden, the stadium goes quiet. In the commentary box, I had to get the TV production guys to get me some extra noise-cancelling earphones, so that I could actually commentate on the cycle ball, because the noise in the stadium was so loud.
Well, just going to tell you a true story here, that myself and Lee Wilde, he's one of the co-organisers of the Flamme Rouge Racing. I think it was the year before the Glasgow Worlds, we saw the adverts and we saw you could book tickets for indoor cycling. So Chris, Lee and I genuinely bought tickets for indoor cycling, thinking we were going to Glasgow to watch the Zwift UCI World Championships then. And it turns out it wasn't. But now I'm wishing I'd gone, given the description she just gave. We didn't go. I let the tickets just lapse, sadly, and I apologise. But I can really appreciate what you were just saying, though, with that entertainment in between. Because Chris also took me to my first ice hockey experience when I was out in LA earlier this year as well. And that was a similar thing, you know, like in the breaks, it was like a party, family atmosphere. And then in the game, everyone just settled down and focused in. So I totally relate where you're coming from.
Yeah. But I mean, on top of that, I mean, I cover last year, 6 rounds of the UCI World Cup Mountain Bike Eliminator Series and the World Champs and the European Championships as well. This year, there's 7 rounds plus the World Championships and the Europeans, which is really good. That's another small discipline that is really growing, bringing mountain biking into city centres. And that's a really, really interesting discipline. And then, you know, other bits and pieces, I suppose, which is, I suppose, one way of putting it, but live work. I mean, do the National Criterium Series in the UK. So for 6 weeks over the summer, round and about across the UK, out live on the mic with a live audience and a live bike race, which is always great fun and very different to being in the studio.
And you do some work with Team Aeonian as well?
Yeah, I joined Aeonian. Oh, crikey. So back in 2020, once I really started transitioning into doing a lot more than just training in terms of e-cycling, e-sports, I reached out. Aeonian had about 50 female members at the time. And one of the other riders that my coach Dean was working with had reached out to them about 2 weeks before me. And she'd gone, this looks like a really good women's setup. And if we're here for the long term, actually getting racing on this platform and getting part and parcel of a team is a really good idea. So I reached out to Carla Williams, and I joined Aeonian, and I raced for about 18 months with them in the B squad. Absolutely brilliant. The community was growing. The team has been growing. I have regularly, all of the Aeonian social rides and things, regularly you'll catch me on a Thursday or a Friday leading one of those. But I was one of the unfortunate ones with COVID. I suffered, how should we say, complications following COVID, which took me off the bike for quite some time. I'm only really just back on. But Aeonian, I have to say, that community have been absolutely phenomenal. I DS'd for an entire ZRL season rather than raced. So that opportunity to be part and parcel of the squad doing it very differently was phenomenal. This season, I've been back on the bike racing, but not with my B squad. I'm back in with the Ds. So the opportunity to have that flexibility when you are coming back from an illness or an accident and the ability to come into a team environment and stay there has been absolutely fantastic.
So you remember when we had Dr. Gilbert on, Si, and both of you and I looked at each other and said, you know, we both feel very stupid around him. Well, in addition to all these things, Emma's also a professor and was a dean at uni too. So she's got us beat by quite a bit. I really appreciate the opportunity. I think that we're going to be able to keep it going, and I think that you're a great person to do it with.
I am. I'm on my second career. That's the way I'm looking at it. Commentating was something I did part-time around the edges for a very long time. You know, I mean, part and parcel of the cycling world, whether that was on the commission at British Cycling, I was the first female chair of the Notts and Derby Cyclocross League, which had been running or has been running since 1980, and we took that through COVID and the shutdown. It's fantastic and very lucky to be able to make a choice and make a career transition and go from one thing that I actually absolutely loved into another area that I absolutely love. So I'm a very lucky person as far as my career is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and Chris is, I think, lucky to have you and you're lucky to have each other. I'm really excited to see where you two take this show in the future. And Emmett, are you prepared for, he's quite a hardline journalist these days, Chris. You know, he's got more and more direct. How many shows have we done together now, Chris? Is it 10, maybe more than 10, or less than 10, somewhere around that, right?
You're stealing my thunder. So I had a little
take the floor, Chris.
Prepared.
Take the floor.
No, I want to do you have anything else that you want to say? Because I might not be able to speak after I read this.
No, absolutely. I have no idea how many shows we did. Emma, you won't know this, but when we did the first half of the show with Aaron Borrell, I mistakenly introduced this show as episode 31 instead of 41 and then corrected myself. And then I was thinking, was 31 the first show? And subliminally, something's happened in my mind there. But no, I genuinely cannot wait to see what happens with you guys in this show moving forward. And I'm sure with the addition of Emma, you're going to be able to dig a little bit deeper with your guests and the athletes that you have on in the future as well. If that does happen, I might avoid being a guest at all costs moving forward. But no, Chris, and I just want to say thank you to you, Chris, as well for the opportunity, because, of course, We were sort of talking before, but we were not working together. I was off doing my recons, of course, and you were doing that with your Zamunike work, and somehow, lovers met, and we spoke on a really regular basis, and you kindly invited me, because let's not forget, you were also, you did the Virtual Velo podcast before. So, I'm really grateful for the opportunity you gave me to co-host this show with you.
Well, I know that you were giving me a hard time in the break because I prepared a statement and I read it earlier. You know, I'm not going to lie to anybody. I've been dreading this episode. It's kind of been it's difficult for me to wrap my head around it because our relationship means so much. So our first episode together was in March of 2023. And I don't know if you remember, but I introduced you as the Jay-Z of cycling esports.
I've never forgotten. I've got it on play on my phone. It's my ringtone.
All right. So since then, we've recorded 20 episodes and I feel that we distinguish ourselves as an independent source of cycling esports journalism and informed opinions about critical issues. Our guests have been some of the sport's most impactful names. And when I asked you to be co-hosts, I never envisioned we would get the following or reputation that we have. As a team, we helped to give the sport a voice. I'm proud of our body of work, but I'm even more proud of the opportunity to provide you with the platform to showcase your talent and all you have to offer the sport. I know you will do great things at My Wish, and I'm looking forward to watching. And I want to thank Emma for agreeing to join the podcast and fill the role of trying to make me sound good. I'm excited about the future for the Virtual Velo podcast, and with you, Emma, at my side, I know we can take it to new heights.
Emma, you've got to step in now. I can't say anything.
Can you not? Well, do you know what? You can feel the emotion, Chris, in terms of, the body of work that you and Si have put together. And I have to say, I've been an avid listener. And I love getting on the bike and putting the headphones in and instead of having tunes, actually listening to the podcast. So I have to say thank you to both of you for giving me that enjoyment as one of your listeners over the year or so that you two have been working together. And it's amazing to have the opportunity. And thank you, Chris, for inviting me on board. I think it's going to be a really interesting journey.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait to watch. And I echo that with the community as well, just because I'm working with, as I said right at the start, really, I'm working with MyWish currently on a few projects. I'm passionate about the sport and I want to see this show grow. I want to see the sport grow, whichever direction that goes in. And I'm still optimistic for a multi-platform scenario, which is what we've always endorsed, Chris, moving forward as well. So, and I'm sure I'm still going to be getting my twice daily messages as a minimum from Chris in terms of he's probably going to switch the tone a little bit now and try and dig for a bit of information, I guess. But still, it's always nice to wake up in the morning. You know what, Emmy, you've got to get used to this because Chris is behind. You're 4 or 5 hours behind us now, Chris, as well. So it doesn't matter what time I message Chris in the morning. If it's 9 a.m. here, I know within 5 minutes I'm still getting a response off Chris because I'm convinced the guy does not sleep. So I will warn you, you've got to be prepared for that. Chris, thank you for the opportunity with the Virtual Velo Podcast. Can't wait to see where you guys take this show. Tell me when, Chris, and I'm going to wrap this show up in the normal manner, and then the show can go on with episode 42 with Chris and Emma.
I think that it's time.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Virtual Velo Podcast. This has been episode 41. I've been Si Bradley, handing over the baton to Christopher Schwenker and Emma Martin. Like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family, leave your comments down below, and we'll see you soon for more Virtual Velo Podcasts.